Good afternoon and welcome to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight. We bring yet another global, on a global level. Yeah. Global level depressing topic of discussion, your drive time show. We are there to make sure that, even if the seats are uncomfortable, even if the seats are comfortable, you know,
we find a way.
Yeah, we find a way to put some uncomfortability here and there. Now don't look at it as a negative way. In a way, even if you are going through some degree of uncomfortability, we are here to show you that there's something more uncomfortable taking place at the UN, or specifically at Sevilla, right?
The city's name is, in English they say Seville, but I just go always with the Spanish name, Sevilla.
Yeah, they kept saying Sevilla. I was like, wait, am I pronouncing it wrong?
No, you know, you're right. It's just sometimes when you're dealing with English audiences, they spell it Seville. They drop mm-hmm. the A at the end and they put the E there. Mm-hmm. In many cases, obviously from watching Spanish football, I stick to the Sevilla, or as the Spanish say, Sevilla. Mm-hmm. They don't have an S pronunciation.
Yeah, the same with, you know, with the Hosea. You know.
Who's Hosea?
Alejandro. Now, me reading that name, I was like, Alejandro. And I was like, no, it's not a J, it's an H. I was like, hey, I can see it's a J, it's right there.
As long as you're not inducing or applying that pronunciation Namibian-wise, you know, we don't want a bunch of angry locals.
A bunch of angry Alejandros?
No, not the Alejandros.
Okay.
The Sevillas.
Oh. I didn't go there. That's on you.
Look.
FFD4, FFD4 financing for development, which is basically a way of figuring out the finances by the United Nations on how to fund the mega project started by back in 2015, right? Mm. Of the SDGs, aka Sustainable Development Goals. And there's 17 of them. And ever since they are, they were implemented, and their progress have been somewhat, very sluggish. Like we had this discussion, last year. So the financing for development, conference, or if you want to call it that, kicked off yesterday in Sevilla, Spain, and it's running until tomorrow, right?
Yeah,
it's running until tomorrow. So a lot of things, basically, I think to some degree we are facing the reality on the table, because if you look at the SDGs, they are about talking about zero hunger, zero conflict, strong institutions. But what we are seeing in the real world is actually the opposite. We're seeing, armed conflicts popping up left, right, and center. You know, people clinging on to power and they don't step down, which is basically the opposite of what we want to achieve. I know.
No, I hope you saw the Cameroonian Prime Minister that gave a speech at this event.
Yeah, the one with an Asian name.
Philemon Yang. I was also like, who's first I misspelled the name Yan, you know, Y-A-N.
Uh-huh.
Nothing. I find a bunch of Namibian profiles of LinkedIn. And I go, Yam, Philemon Yam, Y-A-M. Then I find more Namibians that are Philemon something else, and all those other kinds of Philemons.
And Philemon Yang.
And then I left it like that, and I just added the UN. And then it said, oh, Philemon Yang.
Uh-huh. Cameroon.
A-N-G.
Yeah, I'm reading through that and I see, Cameroonian politician, like, wait, what?
Isn't he still Prime Minister of Cameroon? He's like the 8th or the 10th Prime Minister that they've had.
Uh-huh.
Wow. 8th and 10th. Only now. A country that's been independent for like almost 70 years.
Yep.
But anyway, yeah, you were still saying, Helmut.
Is still ongoing. The financing for development discussion is still taking place. I mean, it's still ongoing, and it will be running until tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is where you see a lot of contradiction now, because one thing that you pick from the whole discussion is, it's in the name, financing. We came up with a dream, of ending hunger and giving everyone, you know, equal access to education and maybe not the best electricity supply, but, you know, universal electrification and the comfortable life and the more like the mostly using, you know, the measurements of the World Health Organization, a.k.a. You must have at least this level of income or this amount of food per day. And but what we are seeing is actually the opposite, and the investments that were that I kept hearing again in a lot of speeches were like to unlock private private sector financing, to unlock private sector financing, and I'm going, okay, this should be interesting.
Oh no, this whole discussion was about how to tax the private sector more, or well, not more, as in add more taxes, because even Guterres stopped short by saying, this is not about trying to punish the global private sector. Well, it's Guterres and the Spanish king, because the Spanish king spoke before Guterres.
Yeah.
They both said this is not about trying to punish someone that is now in a more favorable position or is in a good position. But it's actually trying to find ways of it's a balancing act.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got AJ Banga, the World Bank CEO. Did you know he was the former CEO of MasterCard?
What?
Yeah. He was the former CEO of MasterCard. Now, AJ Banga is now, when he stepped into that role, Hamoud, I think like 2022, 2021, Banga was hailed as being sort of like this financial pioneer, you know, global financial pioneer, jet-setting CEO. And homeboy, yes, I'm sorry for applying the term homeboy to someone's name, an international, an international personality. All his life he's been in the banking and financial sectors. Now,
and people looked at that and went, he will make an excellent financial decision maker. That is, you know, what's the United Nations term for it? Inclusive?
Yes, of course. It's the same with,
seriously?
It's the same with Georgieva, the IMF chief.
Yeah.
She took over, no? Banga took over from Christine Lagarde, who went back to Europe. The former French the former French finance minister under, what was that guy's name? The guy that was married to the celebrity, Hollande, François Hollande's, she was François Hollande's finance minister. So Christine Lagarde obviously vacated, and then AJ Banga takes over.
Mm-hmm.
Because Georgieva, oh, we've got an ad break coming.
Yeah.
Yeah. After 4 seconds, guys.
Kape na ondando dhivolife puudha ShopRite. Elara kanojitu okukupa ondando dhilipevi. Mi pumbi wato punga esko keke. Kashori tere mwe makine gomnyago Bonita Long Life. Geri moga khamano. Kethere nolongo no wei o sindomino go wei no wei. Osho oke jine thin timbu enjuwa rumba kanithuwa yo real gold. Kethere mirango ketato no wei. No senda o mirango wei no wei. Tinda kufuta shivolife po ShopRite Price. Ziriko sigo khamano gayuri nuvo. Oko, ShopRite, akuke.
Welcome back. 15 minutes left to the hour of 5. AJ Banga.
Yeah. So, now even though they've, you know, when you look at the, I look up the man's personal history, Banga's history, they say he's an American Indian, meaning he's probably got like dual citizenship scenarios. Yeah. But, Banga made a very good point when he stepped up, Helmut. Now, please, dear listeners, don't misunderstand us for trying to recite what was already said. We're just spotlighting and showing you focus points and then obviously expanding on it based upon what was said at the opening plenary session, as they called it.
Yeah.
So Banga walked up and Banga said, listen, there is a lot of money in the sector, in the global financial economy. One of those particular scenarios is also a scenario, Helmut, that also takes place, for example, in our country, here in Namibia. Banga spoke about subsidies that that exist. He doesn't say stop subsidizing which or which sector or which scenario. Mm-hmm. Banga mentioned some countries have too much subsidies, and if they scale back on the subsidies that they apply in the local economies, there would be an opportunity to try and bring other particular SDG-related projects up to level or up to standard or fast-tracking that particular, you know, goal or the tasks within that goal in terms of bringing it up to speed. Because once again, like the discussion we did last year about the SDG report of 2024, where Guterres said the status of that report was for sobering reading. Do you know that they still highlight and they still cite, Helmut, 17% are on track of SDGs globally. 17%. That's not even close to a 30.
So I like that number because the SDGs are 17.
Yeah. So that means a percentage per SDG.
Per SDG. What the heck?
That's ugly. Yeah, if you wanted to be as, you know, as vague as that application as I just did now, that's a percentage per SDG. Now, Banga then steps up, as I said, speaks about subsidies. Yes, if governments around the world who know that they've got to work with very tight budgets can scale back a little bit in the, you know, going the route, going, you know, operating as usual, you know, financial year in, financial year out. He highlighted there specifically that, take for example, the mechanism of trying to, you know, where a subsidy comes in. So how does a subsidy sometimes work if Namibians are trying to now to understand why am I making mention of subsidies? Now, in the discussion of what does private sector want from government? Mm-hmm. Now, in many cases, Helmut, we haven't spoken heavily about the give or take that exists between the public sector and the private sector. One of it was before you and I started doing Home Run together back in last year, I had a discussion about what does the private sector want from the public sector, predominantly the government.
Yeah.
Now, when the government wants to entice, they want to invite private sector to operate and to alleviate unemployment in the economy, to invest in research and development, to invest in factories and in mechanisms and in various processing plants and the likes, you know, to generate the continuous, you know, to allow the money to work more efficiently. Okay, let's take out the word efficiently. But just
thank you.
Just to have it permeate a lot better, you know, to have the money in the economy permeate a lot better. Yeah. Because the thing here is about making the money work for the economy so that the government can say, you know what? Our GDP value increased. This has increased and that has increased. Instead of looking at that, instead of seeing that continually skewed picture that we saw back on Friday when you and I did that policy document for the exploration in protected areas and in areas that have a high value species.
Yeah.
Because once again, they went to the mining sector and that whole executive summary of that document was speaking towards to the benefit of the mining sector.
Like, well, we'll protect the area if...
Yeah, if
the money to be made out of blowing it up is more than the money of preserving it, then, well, may God, you know, be with the whatever species is in that, in,
and
you know,
whatever
in that environment.
Heritage situation might be.
Yeah.
Which
applicable.
And it puts a major question mark on that subject matter, right? Now, I went micro to show people, to try and show our listener now, how what these guys at the UN level, internationally, in Spain, are currently speaking about on this micro level. How it literally looks like for you, Namibian, on a micro level. Let me still stay on the talking point of, you know, what does this actually translate to? Now, the downside, Helmut, is a discussion of private sector will always ask for some sort of a subsidy. Meaning, we don't want to pay for water and electricity for the first five years because this is a return on investment. And the return on investment is we've got to pay for contractors. We've got to pay for the property that we have to operate in. Then we have to pay for salaries and wages every month, which is taxes every month. Then they've got to bring the equipment in. Then they've got to pay for other particular things that the government wants also to collect tax on. For example, let's say it's VAT or transportation or fuel costs or storage. They realize that they've got to come and buy transport vehicles, or they have to appoint a contractor that has to transport their goods for them, which is a dish. And you can see the knock-on of minuses versus the singular plus that just exists there.
Yeah.
So then obviously companies would say, okay, for us to be in your economy, because you invited us, we didn't come and scout this economy on our own. We scouted it, but we realized doing business or entering the market here has too many negatives versus other markets that we can compare this country, this market to.
In other words, if we're going to pick your market, you're going to give us incentives for us to operate in.
Exactly. And the South African government gives a lot of incentives to the automobile manufacturing sector in South Africa. They get a lot of incentives. A lot, Helmut. And they also get protections in some cases, for example. You then look at that balance. Now, I cherry-picked an example.
Mm-hmm.
Another discussion, obviously, would also be that there are sort of like, you know, you can't call it subsidies in one side, but let's rather say like allowances, like in the Namibian landscape. We've heard sometimes how people complain and misunderstand when a mining company hasn't paid taxes on certain particular things, because the mine, the facility, had been in care and maintenance. Now, any person should start understanding, and this is where I think and always believe that the business subjects need to become critical core literature and teaching and religious teaching on your educational platforms, because the business subjects on schools should start telling young Namibians, listen, you don't get everything for free. If you go and take something that is not yours, yes, you and the police will have issues.
Mm-hmm.
You and the judge will then have to find each other on a common ground. And believe me, that is the most unequal ground that you will ever find yourself in, because everyone was told, don't steal. Yet you went and did the one thing that you thought you would get away with. But anyway, I'm digressing. You get from what I highlighted in terms of the subsidies discussion, eh? And this is not a critique of what recently happened, because we've got it in the Village e-paper of today. Yes, of today. An article, Helmut, about, if anyone from Ministry of Agriculture is listening, don't worry, guys, this is not a critique to you and the ministry. This is primarily just highlighting one of these particular issues one of the particular issues.
Okay, while you're looking for that, let me point out something take us back to early this year, because those guys kept talking a lot about private sector financing.
Yeah.
Back in February, we had the same thing coming out of the, you know, future of energy security summit that took place in London. Now that was this is 2 months ago, and one thing that Fatih Birol kept pointing out was, private sector financing.
Mm.
And, what I found fascinating was that he lays out, like, the conditions to how lawmakers must now, how lawmakers now have a joint responsibility to make sure that they create the environment that, that will make it conducive for private sector investment.
Mm.
And that's, first of all, making the policy, because, if you're going to invest into energy, you first have to build the infrastructure, this multi-billion dollar infrastructure.
Mm.
No one wants to set up a multi-billion dollar structure, and then there's a conflict. Now you have to pick everything up and go, and then it's just a a matter of weeks, it's all blown to smithereens.
Yeah.
Now, that's a loss that no person will want to incur. So, first, making the policy, ensuring that they say, there's a conducive enough environment, in terms of especially leadership transition, which is a very big problem that we're having right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, a leadership transition and all the political squabbles. That's the first thing that we want to take care of. Now, because energy investments are long-term investments, and they require a lot of money. So anyone that wants to invest in any of this sector will be looking at, if I invest this amount of money, how long will it take for me to make my money back? And it's definitely not going to be 2-3 years. It's going to be 5, 10, 20, maybe 40 years, especially if you're looking into the extractive industry.
And you'll also look at staying there longer. Because if you see a market it starts thriving around your activity.
Yep.
Then you realize,
You know what? I can stay here even longer.
Exactly.
Yeah. So that's where the one thing that brings me back to that energy security discussion of 2 months ago, which also emphasized private sector financing because energy infrastructure is insanely expensive.
Mm.
Yeah, so you'll obviously want this, more like a private and public, sector to sit, to sit around a table and say, you know what, private sector, you have the money. You do this, and we'll do something also on our, on our end to make sure that you have the environment to operate in. And you will have to, you have to employ a bunch of people.
Yeah.
And those people, those people will be paying income tax. You'll be paying corporate tax. And, but then for the first 5 years, we have this and these incentives that will make your life easier.
And that is where my example, Helmut, that I found, because I just didn't find the file. Your example is the opposite of the one I was about to make. Because your example is technically what AJ Banga, Philemon Yang.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Philemon Yang came there like, we implore you, the developed world, please stick to your promises that you made. Yeah, because he mentioned that all it takes is for the developed world to commit 0.01 of their GDP value, their economies, in terms of this fund. It's a specific fund that exists under the UN.
Yeah.
So far, only four countries had met their targets in 2024. One of them was Luxembourg.
Yeah.
It's as big as a farm in Windhoek. Yeah, in Windhoek. Yes, you heard me. I said as big as a farm in Windhoek. You have to go find a farm. That's how big that farm. Sorry, guys. I'm just joking. Luxembourg, Denmark, Norway, and I forgot the fourth country. It was four European countries. We fast forward to the example I wanted to make, like that fits into as the yin and the yang examples that we're obviously giving. Because you already gave the yang, the positive. No, the yin, the positive. I'm giving the yang, the negative. Well, not that it is negative. It's just showing you the two opposites of scenarios.
Yeah.
So my yang example is when you look, Helmut, at, we've got a story in today's e-paper about scenarios where subsidization take place.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got northern communal farming areas, NCAs, or northern communal farmers. The European Union recently handed over trucks to the tune of 20 million Namibian dollars to Ministry of Agriculture, Land Reform, Fisheries, and it's almost got that new long name, and Water. Now, the trucks are geared towards helping livestock farmers take their animals from one point to another point. The moment I saw that, Hamid, I was like, so firstly, the Ministry of Agriculture is now also becoming a further subsidizing element. One such element, which the Auditor General's office already highlighted that potentially this ministry doesn't know what it's actually doing, firstly. Secondly, what the UN guys at the top level internationally, I don't know if we sent someone there, because I saw the King of Eswatini there in Seville. The at that level, they're highlighting, guys, if you are subsidizing certain parts of your economy, you're obviously going to run on a very tight budget. You're obviously going to run on a tight budget. So, it's a very good initiative what the EU does. It's a very good initiative what the Ministry of Agriculture has in terms of trying to assist communal farmers. Don't worry, guys. I'm someone that gives harsh criticism because I myself have been baptized multiple times, even up until yesterday. No, even up until today, I've been baptized with harsh criticism. I undergo it daily. You think you can live your life as peaceful as you want to? Don't worry. There's always a family member or someone that knows how to do that, or boss or colleague. The discussion what this shows, for example, like this entity. Yes, it looks like a pure donation scenario because that's what you see. It's a donation. The second scenario you could have asked was, now, can't someone who has got a similar truck, ne? Mm-hmm. I need to show you the truck, Helmut. A similar truck like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got it, yeah.
Yeah, I found it.
Can't someone who is a Namibian, who finds themselves in the northern communal areas,
yeah,
approach these farmers, these livestock farmers, and say, hey, listen, guys, I've got a truck. For a rental fee per month, per year, this is my number, this is my details. I can transport your livestock from where you want it to where you want them to be, which can either be also at the abattoir, it depends on you,
yeah,
or at the veterinary, or to bring the vet to you. I can give you those transport services. Do you know why I say that, Helmut?
Uh-huh.
Do you know how many times trucks from Omaheke drive here past our studio? Full of cattle. And I know you've seen them.
I've seen them, yeah.
I know you've seen them.
Yeah.
Do you know, in many cases, those are private commercial farmers that hire someone that just transports their livestock for them.
We do this already. Most of the urban areas, you see, especially during the weekends, and interesting enough, mostly in the evening, you see a lot of cars, some of which that are not suited for sofas. You see them carrying sofas, you know. Now, that's mostly, it shows that a sign that, you know, someone got on the wrong side of their landlord. Now they have to find a different one. Now,
they're making an early exit.
They're making an early exit. So, you see trucks for hire, like, all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, I have one interesting question, though, when it comes to this, EU donating trucks, especially to the northern communal, part of the country, the farmers that side. Okay, what breed are you planning on getting in that truck?
Exactly. Ask yourself that first question.
What breed? Because you first have to find out what's the
breed. Who has horns and who does not have horns?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, these are wild breeds. I remember we had a bull that would break everything in sight.
Because of his horns?
Sound of a tractor.
Oh, the sound of a tractor?
Yeah.
Oh, he thought the tractor was invading his territory.
Exactly.
Yeah, because bulls are territorial.
Now, the thing is, the cattle that we own, the breed that we have in the north, in the northern, that's owned by a lot of farmers in the northern part of the Red Line. It's a very wild breed compared to, wild, I mean, in terms of behavior. Because the ones that you find in the southern part of the Red Line, like Brahmas, for example, they are very
docile.
Soft and very friendly.
Yeah, Brahman is very docile. Unless you get to
the Avery. Now, believe me, every farmer that I'm not sure about other parts of the northern part of the country, but the part where I'm from, like the like the northeast, a lot of farmers that you find there, if you just ask them how they are planning on getting a cow on a truck, then they'll be like, gosh, that's a logistical nightmare, because for one, you will have to chase the heck out of it and then secure it with I don't know how many ropes.
Yeah.
And then drag it on that truck.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, again, the tracks that you just used as an example, you see that, when the track stops, you can just hear the kettle, moving, obviously over long distances, moving forward and backwards. Mm. So you can see that, this breed, you transport with a car. Believe me, some breeds, it's like you have to kidnap them. That's
no, I know what you're talking about, Helmut.
So that's why I'm saying,
and that's
the lifespan of these trucks
is also going to be in jeopardy. I know. I hear you. Do you know why I hear you?
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the things I will always tell in terms of the one guy that I knew that worked at Agra, and I won't mention his name, but I'll highlight the program because I used to work in advertising, and I asked him, you know, what's the goal of this program? It was a program whereby they wish to select and advertise and promote the best. The result was the farmers have to showcase the quality of their animals and the methods that they employ. Now, in order for a farmer to participate in this exercise,
mm-hmm.
these guys, this private entity, would need access to your farm, because
mm-hmm.
they want to interview you and they want to see you, what methods you use in animal husbandry. The overall exercise is most animal husbandry.
Oh, yeah.
So they want to see whether you're going to put some GMO stuff in the feed. What are you showing? What does the animal eat every day? How healthy is the animal? How much access to water it has? How many distances the animal has to walk? Because an issue with if you see like scratches and stuff on the knees or the knuckles or the here on the appendages, meaning on the legs of the animal.
Yeah.
Then they realize that the animal had to walk long distances mm-hmm. as well. They go and look at these particular things. Now, obviously, that's in a private sector within the agricultural sector of things. Mm-hmm. The downside here is, Helmut, the question I'm asking, for how long do we have to babysit people that sit with assets that can convert the asset into money? They buy their own truck. Because here's where I need to go on in terms of defending taxpayers
mm-hmm.
in Namibia. Now, who's going to service that truck? Each one of these trucks, Hamut, are a million a pop. 1.5 million a pop. Each one of these trucks. Even with that modified flatbed, which is the loading area. Plus the trailer, because it's a truck and a trailer.
Yeah, well, thank you very much for coming to the service, because, you know, the thing about that is someone will have to service it. The question is, who is going to service it? And this is not asking to sort of like point out, to make a point that the whole donation was a bad idea. No, it was a brilliant idea.
It's a brilliant idea.
Yeah, it's a brilliant idea. But the question, you don't want them having, you don't want them running for 2-3 years and then they break down and then we're back to square one.
And who's going to drive these trucks? Does the ministry have accredited licensed people to drive these trucks?
No, well, people with the voters' cards will be driving them. But look,
just like we realized over the weekend, do you remember, I don't know if you saw the update that our colleague Anna Kleta gave from Kavango East in Rundu about the guy with the learner's driver that drove the government car into a tree and a wall and a fence, I think. Two of the things is a falsehood there. But a guy with a learner's license a government vehicle. He crashed it. Do we have licensed people in the zones where these trucks are supposed to be used? Because last time I checked, it takes a very long time to get that license. It takes a very long time to get that license. And the trucks were supposedly bought for 4x4 capabilities.
Yeah, 4x4 capabilities is what's needed in the northern part of the country, especially the part where I'm from. There's a lot of loose.
I know in the Kavangos,
yeah.
The two Kavangos, you need a truck that is high off the ground.
Yeah.
I know that.
Mm.
But that means any generic bucky can also work, depending on your load, what you're carrying.
Yeah.
And obviously the standard or the quality of the road, the surface that he drives on. But in the parts of the north that I've seen, Nehamud, in my limited exposure to the north, because I haven't been to Kunene yet.
Me neither.
Is that, and from the people I know that I've spoken to that have been to parts of Namibia, from Kunene to Zambezi in a straight line.
Mm-hmm.
The two most difficult areas to travel in, the three most difficult areas, are the Tukavango regions and Cunene. Other places are as flat as a mattress. I'll say it again.
Mm-hmm.
The other places are as flat as a mattress.
The rest?
The rest, they literally have some geological challenges for you.
Yeah, because you have a lot of loose sand in this time of the year, and when it starts raining, you have to deal with mud.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know from Francis' exposure and talking to Francis, well, who's from Zambezi, Francis highlighted the biggest problem there is obviously rain, the rainy season.
Mm-hmm.
And elephants. Those are your challenges.
Yeah, the terrain also, I think, I think they have a lot of underground water because they flood very easily.
Yeah, they flood very easily. So you're dealing with a very, what do they call that thing? Not swamp-like, but it is a flood zone. It is a, what do they call it in geography? It's a flood plain. Meaning it's an area that receives a lot of
air. That's prone to flooding.
Flooding. It receives a lot of flooding. When rainfall occurs, there's a lot of surface water that gathers up. So it's very difficult to have certain particular kinds of actions or activities positioned in that specific area of Namibia. However, Helmut, it's also about the population density of a thing. If these trucks were meant for your home region, Kavango, mm-hmm. It's Kavango East.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's say it was meant for your home region, ne? I would understand if it's positioned in Rundu, and then obviously Rundu can help Divundu, and there's another town in Kavango East.
Okay, Rundu, Divundu, you have, Ndiona somewhere in between.
Yeah. But they can help literally with logistics. I can understand that because communal areas is about you're not supposed to camp off land. But here's the subject matter. I still want to know, firstly.
That's a lot of traveling you'll have to do.
Are there licensed people that can drive these trucks? Because from what our colleague Anacleta posts, what we post on our socials, I've got very little confidence. Because if we allow people with learner's licenses to drive a car and they crash it in Kango East into a tree, what surety do you have that there's sufficient enough people that you can give employment to that have the necessary license skills to drive that truck?
That's one. The second one is you will now have to make sure that anyone putting their hands on that vehicle is qualified to do so, both in driving and fixing.
Not fixing.
Mm-hmm.
You're just supposed to drive.
Fixing is
a separate economic activity. Who's going to be in charge of service, repair, and maintenance? Who's going to buy the tires? Each of these tires is probably a 5,000 a pop.
I have one question with regards to, the first thing that came in my head when I saw that was like, this is brilliant. It's going to help because, moving livestock is a logistical nightmare. If you buy it, far away, you will have to go and spend the night.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the next day, you are basically going to have to walk the whole distance from wherever you bought it from to your village, to where you come from.
Yeah.
Yeah, like your village. And I have done that. It was a very, very, one of those things I didn't enjoy.
I know, Hamoud. It's a nightmare.
Yeah. Now, didn't we have a Chevrolet for the GRN, or was it the police at some point?
No, but then they withdrew because, remember, it was dependent upon Chevrolet staying in South Africa.
Yeah,
General Motors. It was dependent on General Motors staying in South Africa. And because someone was being clever,
mm-hmm.
that was pre-2010,
mm-hmm.
bringing in those cars, no one could buy those cars in Namibia. So you bring in a car into the Namibian service, into the Namibian police service, that is very difficult to service, and it's very difficult to maintain. Why do you think those cars evaporated so quickly off the Namibian road?
That's why I'm coming to that point. It's because, I just feel like, we should learn at some of the... But they still need service, Dwight. They still need service.
This is not Japanese.
What is that? Yeah. Now, look. I don't want us to end up in a to end up in a situation to end up in a situation where we found ourselves.
I'm lying. These are not giant. I don't know this. I don't know this emblem of this truck.
Look. We don't want we don't want to find. We don't want to fall into that Chevrolet case of using a product that we did not basically think through. Although this one is a donation, now we have to figure out how to keep it running so that the farmers in the northern part of the country that needs it the most can keep benefiting from it. Because I don't see a point of not thinking things through and then everything breaks down in 2-3 years and we are back to square one. And that would not make sense. But again, this is this is very similar to the financing for financing for SDG, because again, SDG stands for Sustainable Development Goals. You don't want to you just don't want to start something and then only to watch it after a few years die a natural death. You want to start something that you can sustain. You want to start something that you can keep going. The goal is to start and keep it going, not start and then Peugeot your way out. Which we have done that.
At least this is a brand, Helmut, that will be able to be serviced in Namibia. Do you know why I say so?
Is it?
I quickly looked it up.
Japanese?
No, it's Swedish. It's the Iveco. It's Iveco Astra trucks. So that's what the truck range looks like. So it has 4x4 capabilities for heavy earth moving or any agricultural processes. The downside here is still. There are two Iveco, or is it two Scania? One does Iveco and Scania, and there's one that does predominantly, I think, one of the two brands, because they're both Scandinavian brands.
Yeah.
One of these trucks, Hamut, and I actually slightly lied about the price of the tire of the truck. 5,000 was probably cheap, because I've heard, for the 4x4s, the SUVs and these 4x4 buckies, it could be, depending on the brand, because there are only certain brands that make, that they stock a specific tire for, could be between 2,500 to a proper 5,000, 6,000 for a bucky. For a bucky. Or for the 4x4s that use those off-roading tires. This could mean it could be higher for this truck.
Yeah,
and that's just a tire.
You'd expect that. Now, look, at this point, I'm just sitting and giving them a benefit of the doubt and crossing my fingers also at the same time and hoping we thought this through in terms of, maintenance and everything, so that, again, the goal is the beneficiaries to keep benefiting.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Okay. What do your goodness do this time?
Another particular sort of like small lie that I highlighted a little bit earlier, boy, where I estimated the truck would be $1 million a pop.
How much is it?
Just for the truck, without the flatbed, without the modified, the loading bay, and without the trailer, it's probably 2.5 million.
I'm just hoping we thought it through and,
it's a donation. You don't think through when you get a donation, Helmut. You just receive the donation.
I know.
But here's the concern that I still have. I see 18-wheelers, every year here in Windhoek, roll past our office from Omaheke on this road, this road leading out to the airport. 18-wheelers full of cattle. And sheep and goats coming here through Windhoek. And it says on the side of that, of the unit, the truck, it says there, so and so transport services.
Oh yeah.
So it's a private endeavor to assist other commercial entities. Now, there's someone in this photo, in one of the photos. I want to show you the photo actually, Hamut. When these trucks, because I'm not actually sitting with the content here myself. So, one of the individuals, no, I'll be overstepping there a little bit. But one of the initiatives of this falls into the landscape of the initiatives in terms of our agro-processing discussion that we did.
Yeah.
Where the standing committee of the National Council went to these agro-processing outlets across the country. Where they discovered, they couldn't trace they found the guy in Kietmans, the garment manufacturing plant, but he took the equipment from the agreed upon venue to another venue. You have the non-functioning but empty standing in Nkurunkuru garment factory.
Yeah.
They didn't know who was supposed to be in charge of that facility. The equipment is also just standing there gathering dust. And then they went to Ndangwa where they had the ever-fresh cattle hides with the volunteer workforce who owns the inputs. They owned the inputs. But they weren't responsible for whatever was happening in the septic tank with the stuck cattle hides sitting there. And these are all illustrations of this.
I still don't think those things were stuck. I think they just, you know, ceased the operation for observation after that. And
get those things out there. Get those things out of there. And all that observation that the ministry, that the standing committee did, all of those observations were under the organization NIDA, right?
Yeah.
But it has to do with agro-processing, and agro-processing falls within the particular facilitation realm of the Ministry of Agriculture as well. Now, NIDA, what people also need to understand is, they actually fell under the Ministry of Industrialization and Trade. They didn't fall under the Ministry of Agriculture, just so that you guys know. They fell under MIT, Ministry of Industrialization and Trade, which doesn't exist anymore. So when we sit here, we're looking at a discussion in terms of how to facilitate the agricultural sector with trying to achieve a specific endeavor, we still have to ask burning basic questions. Who's going to be in charge of this hardware? For how long will this hardware be functioning? How much? Because obviously the EU is, they're doing their donation PR, you know, exercise saying, hey, look here, we helped some Namibians, you know, we gave them a truck. Here you guys go. And the Namibians were just like, hey, thank you. You always look after us, eh?
Yeah, you know, just, you know, smile.
You know, let's smile for the camera and some photo ops. And then, you get to another side of the Namibian economy where you literally see fellow Namibian buying a service from a fellow Namibian. They don't argue. There was no dispute. No, you know, no one is running to the newspapers and saying, yeah, that guy owes me money, so I'm here to come and slander his name.
Mm-hmm.
No. They just buy the service from each other, and the one transports the goods of or the property of the other in order to facilitate a transaction somewhere else. Thus, you start seeing, oh wow, there's economic endeavor. Some of those trucks, Helmut, are old. They're old. There was a guy I used to watch on social media.
Mm-hmm.
How his dad has a trucking license. Yeah. They invested in their own truck because they didn't want to pay some people anymore, because that transport company, yeah, has insurance to pay. They've got petrol to pay.
Yep.
That truck has two tanks. A tank on the left side and a tank on the right side.
Service station guys are smiling.
All the way.
Everyone here.
And we're talking about 100 to 200 liters for that 18-wheeler truck, ne? They're not using this 4x4 truck. They're using an 18-wheeler. You know the one with a double trailer?
Uh-huh.
They're using an 18-wheeler. Then they're not wasting time. Now, that truck, Helmut, those trucks run us up a speedometer of almost 1 million kilometers on the speedometer. They can easily record that. That's how durable these products are. So ask yourself, if you just have one truck, you just have one truck, how much business do you think you can make, Helmut? Your own truck, it's your property. How much business do you think you can make from your one truck?
Let me take you back to the example you used earlier about the private sector initiative that I think that was done for observation papers that you referred to earlier, where the a lot of private sector, I think, you know, investigation more like out of market or what market research or whatever they were they were trying to do. And basically, I'm trying to understand how northern communal farmers practice their animal husbandry. I think that's another part now that we have to talk about in terms of for a very long time, and I know this is where culture now comes in really hard. For a very long time, owning cattle was mostly for social status, and when your homie, mistakenly punches someone in the mouth, and now you have to settle the bill by giving them cattle. Now we are talking about commercializing that. Now, obviously,
is it the conversion of the mentality?
The conversion of it. Yeah. That's going to for some that's going to take a while.
Yeah.
I know one guy. I know one guy. One man, not a guy. One man that is sort of like introducing a new breed to his his farm, to his head, as far back as 2011 and 2012 when I was in high school. I know this because the man's farm was not very far from our school. Now, again, this comes down to the first basic question to ask yourself in terms of commercializing, obviously, animal husbandry is, what are you farming for?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because farming for milk and farming for meat are two different things. Are you farming for milk? Because if you're farming for milk, then you get, then you will obviously, start slowly investing into cattle that are known to produce a lot of milk. If you are farming for meat, then you have to find out which breed can be, forced within your budget that is farmed for meat. It's the same with chicken. There are chicken that's farmed for chickens that are farmed for what? For eggs.
Yeah.
Because they are, they are preferred, they are breeds that that basically every poultry farmer will recommend you get if you want to farm. If you want to make a business out of eggs, and for some breeds are just for slaughtering. A lot of us now on the communal side, we sort of like cross our fingers and hope and farm for both. In other words, so well, that one is terrible. It doesn't produce a lot of milk. So, well, I'll just I have that one produces a lot of milk. But here's the thing. It's not the cattle's fault.
No, it's not.
The cattle is just there going like, what do you want me to do?
I'm just here. Hey, guys.
I'm one of those breeds that smart farmers, farm for meat, not milk. I don't think we are there yet, because if you go to a lot of farmers that are farming on a lot of farmers, at least especially from the part of the country where I'm from, we still mix it up. We don't talk a lot about breeds, and vaccination is one of those things that's still heavily reliant on the Minister of Agriculture.
Yeah.
Now here's the beautiful part about the northern farming style, especially when
we
it comes
shouldn't
to,
look like we're
to
grilling
animal
the guys
husband. Oh, I am. Now look, here's the thing: our cattle have names.
I know.
Yeah, but we don't know their birthdays.
No, because, that's true, eh?
Yeah.
That's true, eh?
So, if someone comes then, it's like, how old is this calf? So the information that you find on ear tags, a lot of commercial farmers, if you're going to, commercial farming, you are going to keep a lot of detail on a lot of the animals that you're farming with. Now, information gathering, on communal level of any farming, not just animal husbandry, is a very
sketchy
one.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the same for crop farming. That's the same for animal husbandry. That's the same for, the chickens we have. Well, we just cross our fingers and hope it lays eggs.
And if it does, you know, we don't know if it's about whether we want to do actual poultry farming,
mm-hmm.
but we have to define the poultry farming. Do you want to be an egg supplier or do you want to be a meat supplier?
Yeah, but yeah, the reason why I'm saying I'm grilling is because gone are the days of owning chicken only, you know, for visitors. When a visitor comes, oh yeah, chase one. And then you give the visitors a show of a good time. Now, for those of you that were chasing that, I think that's the biggest insult in African family. For those of you that chased the chicken, are literally given feet. No pun intended, although more like a traditional pun is intended there. Now, the way that we do farming must radically shift.
No.
If one commercialize farming.
It has to.
Hence
the reason I made the joke the other day of the pet goats in Europe.
Pet goats?
You remember the joke I made about the pet goats?
Yeah, I remember.
And you went like pet goats?
I mean, pet goats, that's a...
Yeah, but then you understand why there are just five of them.
Pet goats is what... I mean, someone's... Okay, you call it pet goats.
Mm.
I call it pet steak. No.
Yeah, hence the reason we Africans, you know, we can't just walk around there in Europe because unfortunately we'd start seeing walking steak, free steak there.
Yeah.
But anyway.
You visit your homeboy and then you see a spider, you know, you kill it and it's like, oh, no, that's James. Wait, what?
It had a name.
It is.
So, but as you come by here, as you come back into that discussion,
mm.
AJ Banga's particular take on this scenario of having enough room to play with.
Yeah.
Helmut, on a personal level, on an individual level, the funding for the future or funding for development discussion, in many people's eyes, people that are logical thinking, sane, that act sane, that identify logical thought processes,
mm-hmm.
which is technically you and me currently in this space, we realize, well, you know, if some African countries realized that they needed to collect tax in order to achieve their own development agendas, and instead of hoping on someone to donate things to them,
mm-hmm.
that needs to stop. Because in one of the concept documents that they have out there, they speak about the scenario of donation-driven development must also stop.
Yeah.
Which is one of these things that I actually pointed out to, for example, like in today's talk, the one earlier of the EU truck donation.
Mm-hmm.
Because here's the thing, Helmut. So when that truck breaks down, 3 years, 2 years, 4 years from now, actually I'll give it until next year probably.
Before someone runs it into someone's house.
That too. We'll have an Eagle FM caller from somewhere in any of those regions calling us and saying, yeah, you know, those trucks that were donated to the Minister of Agriculture, the truck doesn't work anymore. We were told our cattle can't be transported anymore. But if anyone really went and go looked at that guy's house, the guy that called in, mm-hmm. the guy's probably driving a double cab Land Cruiser Paki, or he's driving a Toyota Paki, or he's driving a Ford Ranger pickup Paki, or he's driving, what other strong Paki is there? In Isuzu Paki. He or she is driving a Paki.
That's where the conversion now comes in.
Or they've got an Amarok, an even more useless Paki. They're driving an Amarok Paki.
What do you mean useless?
I don't know why a Paki must cost a million, Hamut. I can understand that Land Cruiser Paki from Toyota.
And that thing is built to last.
Because it's big. And I can understand the Nissan Paki that I only saw here for once in the Namibian market, the patrol Paki. There is no double cap variant, it's just single cap. The thing is massive, Helmut. The tire of that thing is massive. The chassis is massive. You can literally load two of your cattle onto the loading bay. That's how big that Paki is. And all it does is it looks like regular, stand-of-the-mill Paki. The downside is, you look at If you do a lifestyle observation, not an audit, a lifestyle observation of the person to whom the donation is made,
mm-hmm.
then you could have asked the question, but there are so many guys that in other parts in Namibia that have private farms, but they use their pakis to come pick up their cattle and drive it.
There's someone there's someone that offers a transport service.
Yeah.
So these two are in business. Now I understand why you're saying that why you are making the point that the whole donation. Donation-based development must come to an end now, because, if you run a business, of transporting cattle in the northern part of the country, congratulations, you're screwed, because, these ones are now coming in and everyone will be like, okay, why do I have to call you? When I can just say, we have new stocks, new donations coming in again.
You'll at least have business, Albert, because remember what we said earlier. They still have to satisfy whether or not there are people in those regions that can drive the truck.
Give it to your cousin, problem solved.
This is ministerial property. It's not the farmer's property. So it's not left at the behest of the farmer or the farmers.
You know, what's funny is that you think a minister doesn't have a cousin. But look.
I'm not disputing that fact. The fact that I'm highlighting, which has not been proven as yet.
Yeah.
How many people are there that are going to be driving those trucks from the ministry? And if, let's say a cattle farmer wants to sell a cat, wants to sell, let's say two cows or a bull, to try and have some money because some sort of a family emergency is coming about, but it has to happen on a Friday because the auction is on the Saturday. The person driving that truck, will it be a government employee? And will you find them on a Friday?
Friday would be a bad idea. Okay.
And will they be there to help you on the Saturday?
If Friday is month end, it's going to be very less likely.
Yeah.
Yeah. But now, goes to show is that, coming up with a project is one thing. Figuring out where to get the money to fund that project is also another problem. It's a whole different problem.
Yeah.
This is not only a problem on a local level, but also on an international level. We have, Vision 2030, Agenda 2063, on the AU level with the Africa, Continental Free Trade Area. We talked about this. The question is, where the heck is the money going to come from? You will have to get it from somewhere.
Yeah.
Now, getting it, it's not like you can just go out there and print. I think this is where I agree that taxi is not going to solve that.
Mm.
You can increase the tax until you tax everyone to death. It's not going to.
And then what happens?
Yeah, and then what? Because every time I try to entertain the thought that taxing people, or more like both income and corporate tax, could solve this problem, it keeps on taking me back to last year's G7 summit. I think that was in Italy, where the CEO of BlackRock pointed out that the debt to GDP ratio of developed countries, G7 debt to GDP ratio, they're 129%. That's bad. First of all, and he points that clearly. That's not a debt you pay your way out.
Mm.
It's unsustainable.
Yeah, it is.
You can't tax your way out of that. Everyone is going to run out of your country.
To where? They run to a place that has even worse debt to GDP rates, the US. Or they run to a place where they still need to understand the truest sense of what do you call it, the negative impacts of colonialism, meaning the developed countries.
Well, another problem that we are not also addressing, not even on a United Nations in this discussion of financing for development, how we're going to accomplish the whole SDG thing.
Mm.
When you listen to Larry Fink saying that, debt to GDP ratio of G7 countries, is an average 129%, 129%. Of your GDP.
Mm.
So you are basically working your people off to pay debt.
And remember, GDP is about all activities. So it's not even about what the government's percentage of that GDP is.
Uh-huh.
This is private and public together.
All of it.
All of it.
129% of it.
And remember, probably the other 50% or 70% of that GDP ratio is private sector. And the private sector is saying, give us subsidies. So now it puts more pressure on that government.
You see, look, that's the direction that developed countries have headed. Japan, US, Britain, all, you know, France, all these guys, if you look at their debt to GDP ratio, these guys are literally drowning, not literally, drowning in debt. But when you look at developing countries, we are headed the very same direction.
Yeah.
Our debt to GDP ratio keeps climbing year by year.
Yeah, Helmut. But then here's the thing. What kind of a message do we send when we've got someone like Philemon Yang from Cameroon, prime minister, whose president doesn't even live in his own country, is shackled up in, okay, the word shackle is not proper, is cooped up in a hotel in Switzerland somewhere, who's not in his country 80% of the year, comes through for delivering speeches, sometimes has to ask people around him, where am I? That's how old the guy is.
And first of all, you have to ask yourself, just to look up the top five most expensive countries to live in.
Switzerland is number one.
Yeah.
The second scenario is that country's prime minister, okay, he's now former prime minister, Philemon Yang, comes and highlights to the rest of the world as an African, the rest of you guys have to stick to, you know, your commitments.
So basically, I ended up sounding like Moussa Faki Mahamat at, you know, Africa, Italy,
and
Africa Summit.
And Moussa Faki, who's saying, yeah, you guys... You have to start
seeing your promises through with action.
Yeah, but they, the guys saying that, the people saying that, the Africans, which are Africans, don't have the best track record of being
seeing their promises through.
Yeah, of being the most financially stable, the most financially transparent, having sound societies, meaning their societies are always prone to inequalities. There's either always some election-related violence.
That's where we shine, not election-related violence, inequality. Oh, no, South Africa and Namibia topping the chart on that one.
Yeah, no, those are our positions. Don't worry. We are rock stars.
No one is taking us that away from us.
We are rock stars, but at least what we do, okay, what we as Namibians do, we... don't allow weird things to come through, for example, like not telling the world that we technically gave away our true independence to France, where our central bank sits in France.
Uh-huh.
The guys that work in your central bank in your country are just, you know, clerks. They're just chief clerks of clerks. There's a chief clerk just administrating paper. But anyway... besides the throwing massive shade there, the downside here is...
you're making it more gory.
No, but I have to. How much so that people understand it? I mean, I'm a Namibian. For Namibian's sake, we know how to dramatize situations.
Yeah.
The worst scenario of this, obviously, is... what was said there in Spain was based upon, once again, the growing divide. Now, after you and I did the South-to-South... meeting, that 1076th meeting. No, that was the non-proliferation treaty. That was the non-proliferation treaty.
Yeah, I remember that one in HD went like, 1,000 what?
Are you serious right about this number? I said, yeah. And I was even like off by like 10 meetings, my number, because I was 1,067.
Actually, those are very few.
It was actually...
they've had more.
To be accurate, it's 1076th meeting they had of the non-proliferation guys. But it was actually the third or the fourth of the South-to-South meeting, the gathering that took place in Geneva. Those guys highlighted the best countries that are best positioned to help the developing world with development issues are the BRICS nations, and we've got an ad break coming up.
The BRICS nations after the commercial break.
It's time to win your share of 500,000 Namibian dollars in prizes with Windhoek Beer. Find one of the 100% real quotes broadcast across Namibia on billboards, in stores, in newspapers, and on social media. Buy any Windhoek Beer, SMS the underliner code to 75050, or scan the QR code to enter on WhatsApp. So, spot a quote, grab a Windhoek Beer, and you could win. Windhoek, real beer for real people. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly. T's and C's apply.
Great news. Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of IMBA? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything IMBA has to offer at an unbeatable price. IMBA, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Welcome back. It's 14 minutes left to the hour of 6. Financing for development.
Yeah. So, the countries that are best suited to technically help the global south are the BRICS countries. Antonio Guterres said it in the report that he was tasked to compile for that global south, the south-to-south engagement that took place on a UN level. In Switzerland, in the city of Geneva. Now, at this particular engagement, these guys are talking about the engagement now of Sevilla, Spain, is that they are talking about, there's a term they keep using, official development assistance. Now, official development assistance is literally this truck donation that took place recently, mm-hmm. where it needs to show an impact, a direct impact. But you and I already, we already highlighted what that donation negates. It negates the opportunity for someone to start a business in being able to transport someone else's.
Yeah, to offer the service that's now taken over by the trucks that are donated. Okay.
Which would have helped someone start a whole value chain in the north. Someone that owned a truck in Andangwa is now being negated of an opportunity because a donation was made to the Minister of Agriculture for a specific part of the country in the zone where his economic activity takes place. Mm-hmm. And like you highlighted a little bit earlier, those guys will now come and tell that guy that is now asking a fee per day, per kilometer, per minute from the farmers or from those livestock operators. They will now tell him, hey, listen, we now have subsidized transport. We now have subsidized petrol because we're not paying for petrol. We're not paying for your costs anymore. Your costs probably were like...
But there'd be a cost to use these trucks, right?
It doesn't say anything about...
Well, it better because, well, again, someone will have to, you know, service it.
Yeah, someone will have to service it. But remember, the donation is made to the ministry.
Yeah. Becomes a Ministry of Finance taxpayers problem.
Exactly. So why must the taxpayer pay for something that the taxpayer doesn't, to transport something the taxpayer doesn't own?
Makes sense.
Why must the taxpayer pay for that service, Helmut? And this is not even on political ideologies.
Mm-mm.
People must understand that. What Helmut and I, we do, we get to the basics of the economy.
Yeah.
We stick to the basics.
Yeah, something that was, something that was also pointed out by the, by Marcos Neto, UN Assistant Secretary General and Director of UNDP. UNDP's Bureau for Policy and Program Support at the, this is at the same event.
Is that the cow that you're talking about, Helmut? Is that the cow that you're talking about?
That one.
With those horns.
Yep.
I think they can fit on it, Helmut.
Yeah, they can. They can. After one of them is,
impaled.
Man, that word always takes me to, blood.
Blood the impaled.
Yeah, I wouldn't kill an animal. I'm more of a people person. I was like, yo, this guy was not joking. Oh boy, was very creative at sending a message to the tax. Eastern Europe is beautiful. Now, Marcos Neto, who is a Brazilian professional, the gentleman pointed out this fourth FFD4 financing for development discussion that's underway in Spain. That in 2023, developing economies spent a record 1.4 trillion on external debt servicing. The whole article was basically written around his speech is titled "Debt for Development Swap: Aligning Fiscal Relief with Environmental Stewardship." In terms of, he's basically, at this point we've all, it has become apparent for both developed and developing country that the debt that we are all, the debt level that we are on is unsustainable. First, yeah. One, we can't keep going. Two, we can't pay it off. Yeah, so now we have to figure out other ways of servicing the debt. Right. Which is why it didn't shock a lot of people when, last year back in 2023, when the Russian president, wrote off billions of dollars of debt. That's because, it's like me owing you $1 million. First of all, I don't even have $500. What makes you think I'm going to afford $1 million? But Mr. Neto here points out that, and that's Neto with an E, not the military organization. In 2023, developing countries spend a record $1.4 trillion in US dollars on external debt servicing. For the poorest countries, debt servicing costs have tripled and interest payment have quadrupled over the past decade, reaching $36 billion. Many least developed countries, as they are labeled as LDCs, now spend almost 15% of total revenue on interest payment compared to 9.5% for other developing countries. In 56 developing countries, interest payments exceed 10% of government revenue. And in 17 of those, the figure surpasses 20% threshold, closely linked to default risk. And we saw that happen to Zambia. Was that last year, about a year or two ago?
No, before Hichilema's inauguration.
Yeah.
Because he obviously, from his predecessor, the previous president, he had to agree to certain particular mechanisms.
Yeah.
And which is also one of the problematic things, for example, like what happened to Kenya last year. The strikes around national debt.
Was that the tax bill that they wanted to pass?
Because they went to the IMF or the World Bank and those guys said, okay, you must restructure.
Yeah.
And then the only solution that the Kenyan president, William Ruto, thought of, hey, you know what? Let's increase the tax. And then the Kenyans were like, oh, hell no. This is not happening on our
watch. They started chanting, Kenya must go, Kenya must go. Ruto translated to cabinet must go.
Yeah.
Cabinet went, and then Ruto was like, happy now? That's my favorite part. From Kenya must go to, from Ruto must go to cabinet. You guys have a good one. Now, my favorite part of that protest is how everyone, when they stormed the parliament, they ran out of parliament and they left a disabled member of parliament in that parliament. The protesting young people are the one that wheeled him out. Thank heavens they were not the violent type.
Helmut.
Sir, Mope?
Yes, the debt to GDP swap discussion that Guterres loves citing is problematic.
Please elaborate.
It explains, this is in a UNESCO document of 2011. Now, it was based upon education, to develop education in developing countries.
Yeah.
So debts, they call it the debt swaps and debt conversion development bonds for education. This was a final report for UNESCO's advisory panel of experts on debt swapping and innovative approaches to education financing.
Mm-hmm.
So you can take the same, even though it's in one sector, you can expand it in terms of the discussion. If you understand the basics of what a debt swap or a debt conversion discussion is,
mm-hmm.
what it means. Now, it doesn't say it hasn't existed before. apparently since the 1950s to help certain countries.
Yeah.
But debt swapping and debt conversion has to do with you have to put up a considerable amount of money as a country, the country receiving the debt forgiveness. First, it speaks of the other country that you owe. They have to forgive your debt. So it's technically writing off your debt, like you made mention earlier, writing off the debt. But you have to prove a condition to them before they write off the debt. Meaning that the sector that they were helping you in, you have to put up money beforehand saying, this is the capital we're going to use to help the programs in the sector. Local currency value. We're going to help the sector with our own financing. Which speaks to, remember when you and I did the medium-term expenditure framework, the 1,000-page document back in March, where we highlighted the wonderful scenario of how we were internally financing most of these particular projects ourselves, which went like, hey, this looks nice, this looks good, because in that, in the executive summary of that document, it said, you know, it was above 60% internal financing for our own projects, and a very small percentage was still external financing for some projects. Developmental countries will only achieve their desired positions if they take ownership of that they are using their money for their needs. I'm really sorry, Helmut. You will only respect something if you own it.
Yeah.
That's why one of the wisest, most uneconomically affiliated speeches that I ever got was on high school when I came here to Windhoek. I had a teacher here at St. Torres. Not a teacher. She was a teacher, for obviously, firstly, but she was also my principal. Where she kept yelling at us every assembly Monday morning. It's the most philosophical deposit that has never parted, that has never left my mind. Every Monday morning she asked us, why do you litter at my school, but you don't litter at home, at your mother's house? Now you and I know what happens when you litter at your mother's house. There's either three forms of authority that intervene on your personal sovereignty, which is usually they invade your personal space through direct intervention and interventionist actions.
In high speed.
Yeah, at high speed sometimes. And it's always delivered in a shock and awe state of things. There's always a lot of noise. It's either you crying or them shouting before you cry. And the three levels of
one or another, you're crying.
Yeah, of authority is usually, it's either your mother, it's either your father, or it's through an elder sibling that has deferred authority to invade your personal space.
Or, you know, Department of Correction, as they are also sometimes known as uncles.
Okay, no, I didn't have uncles that
time. You lucky
I just,
guy.
I just had siblings, you know, siblings that intervened.
You lucky guy.
But that was why I told you I had siblings. And some of those siblings, some of them felt like they were really trying to impress my mother, you know. They were like, you know what, I did a good job. Look at Dwight, look at Dwight. He's crying. He's crying, no way. You know, I did a good job.
Welcome to Africa. Yeah.
So, and it was one of the most basic positions, basic philosophical position.
So, in other words, at home, there are consequences that comes with you littering, like ones that are direct.
Yeah, but, very direct.
Here, you can now just run around doing it because you know that you don't have any direct consequences coming your way.
Exactly. So, it's the same lesson that needs to permeate also in a developmental sense. The yin and the yang examples that we're obviously giving. Because you already gave the yang, the positive. No, the yin, the positive. I'm giving the yang, the negative. Well, not that it's negative. It's just showing you the two opposites of scenarios.
Yeah.
So my yang example is when you look, Helmut, at... We've got a story in today's e-paper about scenarios where subsidization take place.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got northern communal farming areas, NCAs, or northern communal farmers. The European Union recently handed over trucks to the tune of 20 million Namibian dollars to Ministry of Agriculture, Land Reform, Fisheries, and it's almost got that new long name, and Water. Now, the trucks are geared towards helping livestock farmers take their animals from one point to another point. The moment I saw that, Hamid, I was like, so firstly, the Ministry of Agriculture is now also becoming a further subsidizing element. One such element, which the Auditor General's office already highlighted that potentially this ministry doesn't know what it's actually doing, firstly. Secondly, what the UN guys at the top level internationally, I don't know if we sent someone there, because I saw the King of Eswatini there, in Seville. At that level, they're highlighting, guys, if you are subsidizing certain parts of your economy, you're obviously going to run on a very tight budget. You're obviously going to run on a tight budget. So, it's a very good initiative what the EU does. It's a very good initiative what the Ministry of Agriculture has in terms of trying to assist communal farmers. Don't worry, guys. I'm someone that gives harsh criticism because I myself have been baptized multiple times, even up until yesterday. No, even up until today, I've been baptized with harsh criticism. I undergo it daily. You think you can live your life as peaceful as you want to? Don't worry. There's always a family member or someone that knows how to do that, or boss or colleague. The discussion what this shows, for example, like this entity. Yes, it looks like a pure donation scenario because that's what you see. It's a donation. The second scenario you could have asked was, now can't someone who has got a similar truck, ne? Mm-hmm. I need to show you the truck, Samut. A similar truck like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got it. Yeah.
Yeah, I found it.
Can't someone who is a Namibian, who finds themselves in the northern communal areas.
Yeah.
Approach these farmers, these livestock farmers, and say, hey, listen, guys, I've got a truck. For a rental fee per month, per year, this is my number, this is my details. I can transport your livestock from where you want it to where you want them to be, which can either be also at the abattoir, it depends on you, or at the veterinary, or to bring the vet to you. I can give you those transport services. Do you know why I say that, Hamut?
Uh-huh.
Do you know how many times trucks from Omaheke drive here past our studio, full of cattle. And I know you've seen them.
I've seen them, yeah.
I know you've seen them.
Yeah.
Do you know, in many cases, those are private commercial farmers that hire someone that just transports their livestock for them.
We do this already. Most of the urban areas, you see, especially during the weekends, and interesting enough, mostly in the evening, you see a lot of cars, some of which that are not suited for sofas. You see them carrying sofas, you know. Now, that's mostly, it shows that a sign that, someone got on the wrong side of their landlord. Now they have to find a different one. Now,
they're making an early exit.
They're making an early exit. You see trucks for hire, all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, I have one interesting question, though, when it comes to this, EU donating trucks, especially to the northern part of the country, the farmers that side. Okay, what breed are you planning on getting in that truck?
Exactly. Ask yourself that first question.
What breed? Because you first have to find out what's the
breed. Who has horns and who does not have horns?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, these are wild breeds. I remember we had a bull that would break everything in sight.
Because of his horns?
Sound of a tractor.
Oh, the sound of a tractor?
Yeah.
Oh, he thought the tractor was invading his territory.
Exactly.
Yeah, because bulls are territorial.
Now, the thing is, the cattle that we own, the breed that we have in the north, in the northern, that's owned by a lot of farmers in the northern part of the Red Line. It's a very wild breed compared to, wild, I mean, in terms of behavior. Because the ones that you find in the southern part of the Red Line, like Brahmas, for example, they are very
docile.
Soft and very friendly.
Yeah, Brahman is very docile. Unless you get to...
They are very. Now, believe me, every farmer that if, I'm not sure about other parts of the northern part of the country, but the part where I'm from, like the, like the northeast, a lot of farmers that you find there, if you just, ask them how they, how they are planning on getting a cow on a truck, then they'll be like, yes, that's a logistical nightmare, because for one, you will have to chase the heck out of it. And then secure it with, I don't know how many ropes.
Yeah.
And then drag it on that truck.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, the trucks that you just used as an example, you see that, when the truck stops, you can just hear the cattle, moving, obviously over long distances, moving forward and backwards. So you can see that, this breed, you transport with a car. Believe me, some breeds, it's like you have to kidnap them. That's a terrible example.
I know what you're talking about, Helmut.
So that's why I'm saying,
and that's
the lifespan of these trucks
is also going to be in jeopardy. I know. I hear you. Do you know why I hear you?
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the things I will always tell in terms of the one guy that I knew that worked at Agra. And, I won't mention his name, but I'll highlight the program because I used to work in advertising. And I asked him, what's the goal of this program? It was a program whereby they wish to select and advertise and promote the best. The result was the farmers have to showcase the quality of their animals and the methods that they employ. Now, in order for a farmer to participate in this exercise, these guys, this private entity, would need access to your farm because they want to interview you and they want to see you what methods you use in animal husbandry. The overall exercise is animal husbandry.
Oh, yeah.
So they want to see whether you're going to put some GMO stuff in the feed. What are you showing? What does the animal eat every day? How healthy is the animal? How much access to water it has? How many distances the animal has to walk? Because an issue with if you see like scratches and stuff on the knees or the knuckles or the on the appendages, meaning on the legs of the animal, then they realize that the animal had to walk long distances as well. They go and look at these particular things. Now, obviously, that's in a private sector within the agricultural sector of things. The downside here is, Helmut, the question I'm asking, for how long do we have to babysit people that sit with assets, that can convert the asset into money? They buy their own truck. Because here's where I need to go on in terms of defending taxpayers in Namibia. Now, who's going to service that truck? Each one of these trucks, Hamut, are $1 million a pop. Million, 1.5 million a pop. Each one of these trucks. Even with that modified, flatbed, which is the loading area, plus the trailer, because it's a truck and a trailer.
Yeah, well, thank you very much for coming to the service, because the thing about that is someone will have to service it. The question is, who is going to service it? And this is not asking to sort of like point out, to make a point that the whole donation was a bad idea. No, it was a brilliant idea.
It's a brilliant idea.
Yeah, it's a brilliant idea. But the question, you don't want them having, you don't want them running for 2-3 years and then they break down and then we're back to square one.
And who's going to drive these trucks? Does the ministry have accredited, licensed people to drive these trucks?
No, well, people with the voters' cards will be driving them. But look,
just like we realized over the weekend, do you remember, I don't know if you saw the update that our colleague Anna Kleta gave from Kavango East in Rundu about the guy with the learner's driver that drove the government car into a tree. And a wall and a fence, I think. Two of the things is a falsehood there. But he drove a guy with a learner's license.
Driving
a government official. Not a government official. A government car.
Vehicle.
A government vehicle. He crashed it. Do we have licensed people in the zones where these trucks are supposed to be used? Because last time I checked, it takes a very long time to get that license. It takes a very long time to get that license. And the trucks were supposedly bought for 4x4 capabilities.
Yeah, 4x4 capabilities is what's needed in the northern part of the country, especially the part where I'm from. There's a lot of loose
sand. I know in the Kavangos,
yeah,
the two Kavangos, you need a truck that is high off the ground.
Yeah.
I know that.
Mm.
But that means any generic baki can also work, depending on your load, what you're carrying.
Yeah.
And obviously the standard or the quality of the road, the surface that he drives on. But in the parts of the north that I've seen, Nehamud, in my limited exposure to the north, because I haven't been to Kunene yet.
Me neither.
Is that, and from the people I know that I've spoken to that have been to parts of Namibia, from Kunene to Zambezi in a straight line,
mm-hmm.
the two most difficult areas to travel in, the three most difficult areas, are the two Kavango regions and Kunene. Other places are as flat as a mattress. I'll say it again.
Mm-hmm.
The other places are as flat as a mattress.
The rest,
they literally have some geological challenges for you.
Yeah, because you have a lot of loose sand in this time of the year, and when it starts raining, you have to deal with mud.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know from Francis' exposure and talking to Francis, well, who's from Zambezi, Francis highlighted the biggest problem there is obviously rain, the rainy season.
Mm-hmm.
And elephants. Those are your challenges.
Yeah, the terrain also, I think, I think they have a lot of underground water because they flood very easily.
Yeah, they flood very easily. So you're dealing with a very, what do they call that thing? Not swamp-like, but it is a flood zone. It is a, what do they call it in geography? It's a flood plain. Meaning it's an area that receives a lot of
air. That's prone to flooding.
Flooding. It receives a lot of flooding. When rainfall occurs, there's a lot of surface water that gathers up. So it's very difficult to have certain particular kinds of actions or activities positioned in that specific area of Namibia. However, Helmut, it's also about the population density of a thing. If these trucks were meant for your home region, Kavango, it's Muskavango East.
Yeah.
Let's say it was meant for your home region, ne? I would understand if it's positioned in Rundu, and then obviously Rundu can help Divundu, and there's another town in Kavango East.
Okay, Rundu, Divundu, you have, Ndiona somewhere in between.
Yeah. But they can help literally with logistics. I can understand that because communal areas is about you're not supposed to camp off land. But here's the subject matter. I still want to know, firstly.
That's a lot of traveling you'll have to do.
Are there licensed people that can drive these trucks? Because from what our colleague Anacleta posts, what we post on our socials, I've got very little confidence. Because if we allow people with learner's licenses to drive a car and they crash it in Kango East into a tree, what surety do you have that there's sufficient enough people that you can give employment to that have the necessary license skills to drive that truck?
That's one. The second one is you will now have to make sure that anyone putting their hands on that vehicle is qualified to do so, both in driving and fixing.
Not fixing.
Mm-hmm.
You're just supposed to drive.
Fixing is
a separate economic activity. Who's going to be in charge of service, repair, and maintenance? Who's going to buy the tires? Each of these tires is probably a 5,000 a pop.
I have one question with regards to, the first thing that came in my head when I saw that was like, this is brilliant. It's going to help because, moving livestock is a logistical nightmare. If you buy it, far away, you will have to go and spend the night.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the next day, you are basically going to have to walk the whole distance from wherever you bought it from to your village, to where you come from.
Yeah.
Like your village. And I have done that. It was a very, very, one of those things I didn't enjoy.
I know, Hamoud. It's a nightmare.
Yeah. Now, didn't we have a Chevrolet for the GRN, or was it the police at some point?
No, but then they withdrew because, remember, it was dependent upon Chevrolet staying in South Africa.
Yeah,
General Motors. It was dependent on General Motors staying in South Africa. And because someone was being clever,
mm-hmm.
that was pre 2010,
mm-hmm.
bringing in those cars, no one could buy those cars in Namibia. So you bring in a car into the Namibian service, into the Namibian police service, that is very difficult to service, and it's very difficult to maintain. Why do you think those cars evaporated so quickly off the Namibian
road? That's why I'm coming to that point. It's because, look, I just feel like, we should learn. But they still need service, Dwight. They still need service.
This is not Japanese.
What is that? Yeah. Now, look, I don't want us to end up in a, to end up in a situation, to end up in a situation where we found ourselves.
I'm lying. These are not giant. I don't know this. I don't know this emblem of this truck.
Look, we don't want, we don't want to find, we don't want to fall into that Chevrolet case of, using a product that we did not basically think through. Although this one is a donation, now we have to figure out, how to keep it running so that, the farmers in the northern part of the country that needs it the most can keep benefiting from it. Because I don't see a point of, not thinking things through and then everything breaks down in 2-3 years and we are back to square one. And that would not make sense. But, again, this is very similar to the, financing for, financing for SDG, because again, SDG stands for Sustainable Development Goals. You don't want to just start something and then only to watch it after a few years die a natural death. You want to start something that you can sustain. You want to start something that you can keep going. The goal is to start and keep it going, not start and then Peugeot your way out. Which we have done that.
At least this is a brand, Helmut, that will be able to be serviced in Namibia. Do you know why I say so?
Is it?
I quickly looked it up.
Japanese?
No, it's Swedish. It's the Iveco. It's Iveco Astra trucks. So that's what the truck range looks like. So it has 4x4 capabilities for heavy earth moving or any agricultural processes. The downside here is still. There are two Iveco, or is it two Scania? One does Iveco and Scania, and there's one that does predominantly, I think, one of the two brands. Because they're both Scandinavian brands.
Yeah.
One of these trucks, Hamut, and I actually slightly lied about the price of the tire of the truck. 5,000 was probably cheap, because I've heard for the 4x4s, the SUVs and these 4x4 buckies, it could be, depending on the brand, because there are only certain brands that make, that they stock a specific tire for. Could be between 2,500 to a proper 5,000, 6,000 for a bucky. For a bucky. Or for the 4x4s that use those off-roading tires. This could mean it could be higher for this truck.
Yeah,
and that's just a tire.
You'd expect that. Now, look, at this point, I'm just sitting and giving them a benefit of the doubt and crossing my fingers also at the same time and hoping we thought this through in terms of, maintenance and everything so that, again, the goal is the beneficiaries to keep benefiting.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Okay. What do your goodness do this time?
Another particular sort of like small lie that I highlighted a little bit earlier, boy, where I estimated the truck would be $1 million a pop.
How much is it?
Just for the truck, without the flatbed, without the modified, the loading bay,
uh-huh.
and without the trailer, it's probably 2.5 million.
I'm just hoping we thought it through and,
it's a donation. You don't think through when you get a donation, Helmut. You just receive the donation.
I know.
But here's the concern that I still have. I see 18-wheelers, every day, every year here in Windhoek, roll past our office from Omaheke on this road, this road leading out to the airport. 18-wheelers full of cattle. And sheep and goats coming here through Windhoek. And it says on the side of that, of the unit, the truck, it says there, so-and-so transport services.
Oh, yeah.
So it's a private endeavor to assist other commercial entities. Now, there's someone in this photo, in one of the photos. I want to show you the photo, actually, Hamoud, when these trucks, because I'm not actually sitting with the content here myself. So, one of the individuals, no. I'll be overstepping there a little bit. But one of the initiatives of this falls into the landscape of the initiatives in terms of our agro-processing discussion that we did.
Yeah.
Where the standing committee of the National Council went to these agro-processing outlets across the country, where they discovered, they couldn't trace they found the guy in Kietmans, the garment manufacturing plant, but he took the equipment from the agreed upon venue to another venue. You have the non-functioning but empty standing Nkurunkuru garment factory.
Yeah.
They didn't know who was supposed to be in charge of that facility. The equipment is also just standing there gathering dust. And then they went to Ndangwa where they had the ever-fresh cattle hides with the volunteer workforce who owns the inputs. They owned the inputs. But they weren't responsible for whatever was happening in the septic tank with the stuck cattle hides sitting there. And these are all illustrations of this.
I still don't think those things were stuck. I think they just, you know, ceased the operation for observation after that. And
get those things out there. Get those things out of there. And all that observation that the ministry, that the standing committee did, all of those observations were under the organization NIDA, right?
Yeah.
But it has to do with agro-processing, and agro-processing falls within the particular facilitation realm of the Ministry of Agriculture as well. Now, NIDA, what people also need to understand is, they actually fell under the Ministry of Industrialization and Trade. They didn't fall under the Ministry of Agriculture, just so that you guys know. They fell under MIT, Ministry of Industrialization and Trade, which doesn't exist anymore. So when we sit here, we're looking at a discussion in terms of how to facilitate the agricultural sector with trying to achieve a specific endeavor. We still have to ask burning basic questions. Who's going to be in charge of this hardware? For how long will this hardware be functioning? How much? Because obviously the EU is, they're doing their donation PR, you know, exercise saying, hey, look here, we helped some Namibians, you know, we gave them a truck. Here you guys go. And the Namibians were just like, hey, thank you. You always look after us, eh?
Yeah, you know, just, you know, smile.
You know, let's smile for the camera and some photo ops. And then you get to another side of the Namibian economy where you literally see fellow Namibian buying a service from a fellow Namibian. They don't argue. There was no dispute. No, you know, no one is running to the newspapers and saying, yeah, that guy owes me money, so I'm here to come and slander his name.
Mm-hmm.
No. They just buy the service from each other, and the one transports the goods of or the property of the other in order to facilitate a transaction somewhere else. Thus, you start seeing, oh, wow, there's economic endeavor. Some of those trucks, Helmut, are old. They're old. There was a guy I used to watch on social media.
Mm-hmm.
How his dad has a trucking license. Yeah. They invested in their own truck because they didn't want to pay some people anymore. Because that transport company, yeah, has insurance to pay. They've got petrol to pay.
Yep.
That truck has two tanks. A tank on the left side and a tank on the right side.
Service station guys are smiling.
All the way.
Everyone here.
And we're talking about 100 to 200 liters for that 18-wheeler truck, ne? They're not using this 4x4 truck. They're using an 18-wheeler. You know, the one with a double trailer?
Uh-huh.
They're using an 18-wheeler. Then they're not wasting time. Now, that truck, Helmut, those trucks run us up a speedometer of almost 1,000,000 kilometers on the speedometer. They can easily record that. That's how durable these products are. So ask yourself, if you just have one truck, you yourself, you just have one truck, how much business do you think you can make, Helmut? Your own truck, it's your property. How much business do you think you can make from your one truck?
You know, let me take you back to the example you used earlier about, you know, the private sector initiative that, I think that was done for observation papers that you referred to earlier. Mm-hmm. Where the, a lot of, private sector, I think, you know, investigation, more like out of, market or what, you know, market, research or whatever they were, they were trying to do. Mm-hmm. And basically I'm trying to understand how northern communal farmers, practice their animal husbandry. I think that's another part now that we have to talk about in terms of, for a very long time, and I know this is where culture now comes in really hard. For a very long time, owning, cattle was mostly for social status, and when your homie, mistakenly punches someone in, in the mouth, and now you have to settle the bill by giving them cattle. Now we are talking about commercializing that. Now, obviously,
is it the conversion of the mentality?
The conversion of it. Yeah. That's going to for some that's going to take a while.
Yeah.
I know one guy. I know one guy. One man, not a guy. One man that is sort of like introducing a new breed to his to his farm, to his head, as far back as 2011 and 2012 when I was in high school. I know this because the man's farm was not very far from our school.
Mm.
Now, again, this comes down to the first basic question to ask yourself in terms of commercializing, obviously, animal husbandry is, what are you farming for?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because farming for milk and farming for meat are two different things. Are you farming for milk? Because if you're farming for milk, then you get, then you will obviously, start slowly investing into cattle that are known to produce a lot of milk.
Mm.
If you are farming for meat, then you have to find out which breed can be, forced within your budget that is farmed for meat. It's the same with chicken. There are chickens that are farmed for what? For eggs.
Yeah.
Because they are, they are preferred, they are breeds that, that basically every poultry farmer will recommend you get if you want to farm. If you want to make a business out of eggs, and for some breeds are just for slaughtering. A lot of us now on the communal side, we sort of like cross our fingers and hope and farm for both. In other words, so well, that one is terrible. It doesn't produce a lot of milk. So, well, I'll just I have that one produces a lot of milk. But here's the thing. It's not the cattle's fault.
No, it's not.
The cattle is just there going like, what do you want me to do?
I'm just here. Hey, guys.
I'm one of those breeds that smart farmers, farm for meat.
Yeah.
Not milk. I don't think we are there yet, because if you go to a lot of farmers that are farming on a lot of farmers, at least especially from the part of the country where I'm from, we still mix it up. We don't talk a lot about breeds, and vaccination is one of those things that's still heavily reliant on the Minister of Agriculture.
Yeah.
Now here's the beautiful part about the northern farming style, especially when
you
come
shouldn't
to,
look like we're
to
growing
animal
the guys
husband.
Somewhat.
Oh, I am. Now look, here's the thing: our cattle have names.
I know.
Yeah, but we don't know their birthdays.
No, because, yeah, that's true, eh?
Yeah.
That's true, eh?
So if someone comes then, it's like, so, how old is this calf? So the information that you find on ear tags, a lot of commercial farmers, if you're going to, commercial farming, you are going to keep a lot of detail on a lot of the animals that you're farming with. Now, information gathering on communal level of any farming, not just animal husbandry, is a very
sketchy
one.
Yeah.
That's the same for crop farming. That's the same for animal husbandry. That's the same for, the chickens we have. Well, we just cross our fingers and hope it lays eggs.
And if it does, you know, we don't know if it's about whether we want to do actual poultry farming, but we have to define the poultry farming. Do you want to be an egg supplier or do you want to be a meat supplier?
Yeah, the reason why I'm saying I'm grilling is because gone are the days of owning chicken only, you know, for visitors. When a visitor comes, oh yeah, chase one, and then you give the visitors a show of good time. Now, for those of you that were chasing that, I think that's the biggest insult in African family. For those of you that chased the chicken, are literally given feet. No pun intended, although more like a traditional pun is intended there. Now, the way that we do farming must radically shift.
No.
If one commercialize farming.
It has to.
It has to shift.
Hence the reason I made the joke the other day of the pet goats in Europe.
Pet goats?
You remember the joke I made about the pet goats?
Yeah, I remember.
And you went like pet goats?
I mean, pet goats, that's a...
But then you understand why there are just five of them.
Pet goats is what, you call it pet goats.
Mm.
I call it pet steak, you know.
Yeah, hence the reason we Africans, you know, we can't just walk around there in Europe because unfortunately we'd start seeing walking steak, free steak there.
Yeah.
But anyway.
You visit your homeboy and then you you see a spider, you know, you kill it and it's like, no, that's James. Wait, what?
It had a name.
It did.
So, But as you come by here, as you come back into that discussion, AJ Banga's particular take on this scenario of having enough room to play with.
Yeah.
Helmut, on a personal level, on an individual level, the funding for the future or funding for development discussion, in many people's eyes, people that are logical thinking, sane, that act sane, that identify logical thought processes, which is technically you and me currently in this space, we realize, if some African countries realized that they needed to collect tax in order to achieve their own development agendas, and instead of hoping on someone to donate things to them, that needs to stop. Because in one of the concept documents that they have out there, they speak about the scenario of donation-driven development must also stop.
Yeah.
Which is one of these things that I actually pointed out to, for example, like in today's talk, the one earlier of the EU truck donation. Because here's the thing, Helmut. So when that truck breaks down, 3 years, 2 years, 4 years from now, actually I'll give it until next year probably.
Before someone runs it into someone's house.
That too. We'll have an Eagle FM caller from somewhere in any of those regions calling us and saying, yeah, you know, those trucks that were donated to the Minister of Agriculture, the truck doesn't work anymore. We were told our cattle can't be transported anymore. But if anyone really went and go looked at that guy's house, the guy that called in, the guy's probably driving a double cab Land Cruiser Paki, or he's driving a Toyota Paki, or he's driving a Ford Ranger pickup Paki, or he's driving, what other strong Paki is there? An Isuzu Paki. He or she is driving a Paki.
That's where the conversion now comes in.
Or they've got an Amarok, an even more useless Paki. They're driving an Amarok Paki.
What do you mean useless?
I don't know why a Paki must cost a million, Hamut. I can understand that Land Cruiser Paki from Toyota.
And that thing is built to last.
Because it's big. And I can understand the Nissan Paki that I only saw here for once in the Namibian market, the patrol Paki. There is no double cap variant, it's just single cap. The thing is massive, Helmut. The tire of that thing is massive. The chassis is massive. You can literally load two of your cattle onto the loading bay. That's how big that Paki is. And all it does is it looks like regular, stand-of-the-mill Bucky. The downside is, you look at, when you, if you do an, a lifestyle observation, not an audit, a lifestyle observation of the person to whom the donation is made, then you could have asked the question, but there are so many guys that in other parts in Namibia that have private farms, but they use their buckies to come pick up their cattle and drive it.
There's someone that's there's someone that offers a transport service.
Yeah.
To those, so these two are in business. Now I understand why you're saying that why you are making the point that the whole donation based development must come to an end now because if you run a business of transporting cattle in the northern part of the country, congratulations, you're screwed. Because, well, these ones are now coming in and everyone will be like, okay, why do I have to call you when I can just say, well, we have new stocks, new donations coming in again?
You'll at least have business, Albert, because remember what we said earlier. They still have to satisfy whether or not there are people in those regions that can drive the truck.
Give it to your cousin. Problem solved.
Remember, this is ministerial property. It's not the farmer's property. So it's not left at the behest of the farmer or the farmers.
You know, what's funny is that you think a minister doesn't have a cousin. But look.
I'm not disputing that fact. The fact that I'm highlighting, which has not been proven as yet.
Yeah.
How many people are there that are going to be driving those trucks from the ministry? And if, let's say a cattle farmer wants to sell a cat, wants to sell, let's say two cows or a bull, to try and have some money because some sort of a family emergency is coming about, but it has to happen on a Friday because the auction is on the Saturday, the person driving that truck, will it be a government employee? And will you find them on a Friday?
Friday would be a bad idea. Okay.
And will they be there to help you on the Saturday?
If Friday's month end, it's going to be very less likely.
Yeah.
But now, what this goes to show is that coming up with a project is one thing. Figuring out where to get the money to fund that project is also another problem. It's a whole different problem.
Yeah.
This is not only a problem on a local level, but also on an international level. We have, Vision 2030, Agenda 2063, on the AU level with the Africa, Continental Free Trade Area. We talked about this. The question is, where the heck is the money going to come from? You will have to get it from somewhere.
Yeah.
Now, getting it, it's not like you can just go out there and print. I think this is where I agree that taxing is not going to solve that. You can increase the tax until you tax everyone to death. It's not going to.
And then what happens?
Yeah, and then what? Because the whole every time I try to entertain the thought that taxing people, or more like both income and corporate tax, could solve this problem, it keeps on taking me back to last year's G7 summit. I think that was in Italy, where the CEO of BlackRock pointed out that the debt to GDP ratio of developed countries, G7 debt to GDP ratio, they're 129%. That's bad. First of all, and he points that clearly. That's not a debt you pay your way out. It's unsustainable.
Yeah, it is.
You can't tax your way out of that. Everyone is going to run out of your country.
To where? They run to a place that has even worse debt to GDP rates, the US. Or they run to a place where they still need to understand the truest sense of what do you call it, the negative impacts of colonialism, meaning the developed countries.
Well, another problem that we are not also addressing, not even on a United Nations in this discussion of financing for development, how we're going to accomplish the whole SDG thing. When you listen to Larry Fink saying that, debt to GDP ratio of G7 countries, is an average 129%, 129%. Of your GDP. So you are basically working your people off to pay debt.
And remember, GDP ne is about all activities. So it's not even about what the government's percentage of that GDP is.
Uh-huh.
This is private and public together.
All of it.
All of it.
129% of it.
And remember, probably the other 50% or 70% of that GDP ratio is private sector. And the private sector is saying, give us subsidies. So now it puts more pressure on that government.
You see, look, that's the direction that developed countries have headed. Japan, US, Britain, all, you know, France, all these guys, if you look at their debt to GDP ratio, these guys are literally drowning, not literally, drowning in debt. But when you look at developing countries, we are headed the very same direction.
Yeah.
Our debt to GDP ratio keeps climbing year by year.
Yeah, Helmut. But then, here's the thing. What kind of a message do we send when we've got someone like Philemon Yang from Cameroon, Prime Minister, whose president doesn't even live in his own country, is shackled up in... Okay, the word shackle is not proper. Is cooped up in a hotel in Switzerland somewhere, who's not in his country 80% of the year, comes through for delivering speeches, sometimes has to ask people around him, where am I? That's how old the guy is.
And first of all, you have to ask yourself, just look up the top 5 most expensive countries to live in.
Switzerland is number 1.
Yeah.
The second scenario is that country's prime minister, okay, he's now former prime minister, Philemon Yang, comes and highlights to the rest of the world as an African, the rest of you guys have to stick to, you know, your commitments.
So basically, I ended up sounding like Moussa Faki Mahamat at, you know, Africa, Italy,
and
Africa Summit.
And Moussa Faki, who's saying, you guys...
You have to start seeing your promises through with action.
Yeah, but they, the guys saying that, the people saying that, the Africans, which are Africans, don't have the best track record of being
seeing their promises through.
Yeah, of being the most financially stable, the most financially transparent, having sound societies, meaning their societies are always prone to inequalities. There's either always some election-related violence.
That's where we shine, not election-related violence, inequality. Oh, no, South Africa and Namibia are topping the chart on that one.
Yeah, no, those are our positions. Don't worry. We are rock stars.
No one is taking us that away from us.
We are rock stars, but at least what we do, okay, what we as Namibians do, we don't allow weird things to come through, for example, like not telling the world that we technically gave away our true independence to France, where our central bank sits in France.
Uh-huh.
The guys that work in your central bank in your country are just, you know, clerks. They're just chief clerks of clerks. There's a chief clerk just administrating paper. But anyway, besides the throwing massive shade there, the downside here is...
You're making it more gory.
No, but I have to. I'm not sure people understand it. I mean, I'm a Namibian. For Namibian's sake, we know how to dramatize situations.
Yeah.
The worst scenario of this, obviously, is... what was said there in Spain was based upon, once again, the growing divide. Now, after you and I did the South-to-South meeting, that 1076th meeting, no, that was the non-proliferation treaty. That was the non-proliferation treaty.
Yeah, I remember that one, and HD went like, 1,000 what?
Are you serious, Dwight, about this number? I said, yeah. And I was even like off by like 10 meetings, my number, because I was 1,067.
Actually, those are very few.
It was actually...
They've had more.
To be accurate, it's 1076th meeting they had of the non-proliferation guys. But it was actually what, the third or the fourth of the South-to-South meeting, the gathering that took place in Geneva. Those guys highlighted the best countries that are best positioned to help the developing world with development issues are the BRICS nations, and we've got an ad break coming up.
the BRICS nations after the commercial break.
It's time to win your share of 500,000 Namibian dollars in prizes with Windhoek Beer. Find one of the 100% real quotes broadcast across Namibia on billboards, in stores, in newspapers, and on social media. Buy any Windhoek Beer, SMS the underliner code to 75050, or scan the QR code to enter on WhatsApp. So, spot a quote, grab a Windhoek Beer, and you could win. Windhoek, real beer for real people. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly. T's and C's apply.
Great news. Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Welcome back. It's 14 minutes left to the hour of 6. Financing for development.
Yeah. So, the countries that are best suited to technically help the global south are the BRICS countries. Antonio Guterres said it in the report that he was tasked to compile for that global south, the south-to-south engagement that took place on a UN level. In Switzerland, in the city of Geneva. Now, at this particular engagement, these guys are talking about the engagement now of Sevilla, Spain, is that they are talking about, there's a term they keep using, official development assistance. Now, official development assistance is literally this truck donation that took place recently, mm-hmm. where it needs to show an impact, a direct impact. But you and I already, we already highlighted what that donation negates. It negates the opportunity for someone to start a business in being able to transport someone else's.
Yeah, to offer the service that's now taken over by the trucks that are donated. Okay.
Which would have helped someone start a whole value chain in the north. Someone that owned a truck in Andangwa is now being negated of an opportunity because a donation was made to the Minister of Agriculture for a specific part of the country in the zone where his economic activity takes place. Mm-hmm. And like you highlighted a little bit earlier, those guys will now come and tell that guy that is now asking a fee per day, per kilometer, per minute from the farmers or from those livestock operators. They will now tell him, hey, listen, we now have subsidized transport. We now have subsidized petrol because we're not paying for petrol. We're not paying for your costs anymore. Your costs probably were like...
But there'd be a cost to use these trucks, right?
It doesn't say anything about...
Well, it better because, well, again, someone will have to, you know, service it.
Yeah, someone will have to service it. But remember, the donation is made to the ministry.
Yeah. Becomes a Ministry of Finance taxpayers' problem.
Exactly. So why must the taxpayer pay for something that the taxpayer doesn't, to transport something the taxpayer doesn't own?
Makes sense.
Why must the taxpayer pay for that service, Helmut? And this is not even on political ideologies. Mm-mm. People must understand that. What Helmut and I, we do, we get to the basics of the economy.
Yeah.
We stick to the basics.
Yeah, something that was, something that was also pointed out by the, by Marcos Neto, UN Assistant Secretary General and Director of UNDP, UNDP's Bureau for Policy and Program Support at the, you know, this is at the same event.
Mm. Is that the cow that you're talking about, Helmut? Check. Is that the cow that you're talking about?
Oh, yeah, that one.
With those horns.
Yep.
I think they can fit on it, Helmut.
Yeah, they can. They can. After one of them is, you know.
Impaled.
Uh-huh. Man, that, you know, that word always takes me to, blood.
Blood the impaled.
Yeah, I wouldn't kill an animal. I'm more of a people person. I was like, yo, this guy was not joking. Oh boy, was very creative at sending a message to the tax. Eastern Europe is beautiful. Now, Marcos Neto, who is a Brazilian professional, the gentleman pointed out this fourth FFD4 financing for development discussion that's underway in Spain. That in 2023, developing economies spent a record 1.4 trillion on external debt servicing. The whole article was basically written around his speech is titled "Debt for Development Swap: Aligning Fiscal Relief with Environmental Stewardship." In terms of, he's basically, at this point it has become apparent for both developed and developing country that the debt that we are all, the debt level that we are on is unsustainable. Yeah. First, one, we can't keep going. Two, we can't pay it off. Yeah, so now we have to figure out other ways of servicing the debt. Right. Which is why it didn't shock a lot of people when, last year back in 2023, when the Russian president, wrote off billions of dollars of debt. That's because, it's like me owing you $1 million. First of all, I don't even have $500. What makes you think I'm going to afford $1 million? But Mr. Neto here points out that, and that's Neto with an E, not the military organization. In 2023, developing countries spend a record $1.4 trillion in US dollars on external debt servicing. For the poorest countries, debt servicing costs have tripled and interest payment have quadrupled over the past decade, reaching $36 billion. Many least developed countries, or as they are labeled as LDCs, now spend almost 15% of total revenue on interest payment compared to 9.5% for other developing countries. In 56 developing countries, interest payments exceed 10% of government revenue. And in 17 of those, the figure surpasses 20% threshold, closely linked to default risk. And we saw that happen to Zambia. Was that last year, about a year or two ago?
No, before Hichilema's inauguration.
Yeah.
Because he obviously, from his predecessor, the previous president, he had to agree to certain particular mechanisms.
Yeah.
And which is also one of the problematic things, for example, like what happened to Kenya last year. The strikes around national debt.
Was that the tax bill that they wanted to pass?
Because they went to the IMF or the World Bank and those guys said, okay, you must restructure.
Yeah.
And then the only solution that the Kenyan president, William Ruto, thought of, hey, you know what? Let's increase the tax. And then the Kenyans were like, oh, hell no. This is not happening on our
own. So they started chanting, Kenya must go, Kenya must go. Ruto translated to cabinet must go.
Yeah.
You know, cabinet went, and then Ruto was like, happy now? That's my favorite part. You know, from Kenya must go to, from Ruto must go to cabinet. You guys have a good one. Now, my favorite part of that protest is how everyone, when they stormed the parliament, they ran out of parliament and they left a disabled member of parliament in that parliament. The protesting young people are the one that wheeled him out. Thank heavens they were not the violent type.
Helmut.
Sir, Mope?
The debt to GDP swap discussion that Guterres loves citing is problematic.
Please elaborate.
It explains, this is in a UNESCO document of 2011. Now, it was based upon education, to develop education in developing countries.
Yeah.
So they call it the debt swaps and debt conversion development bonds for education. This was a final report for UNESCO's advisory panel of experts on debt swapping and innovative approaches to education financing.
Mm-hmm.
So you can take the same, even though it's in one sector, you can expand it in terms of the discussion. If you understand the basics of what a debt swap or a debt conversion discussion is,
mm-hmm.
what it means. Now, it doesn't say it hasn't existed before. Apparently since the 1950s to help certain countries.
Yeah.
But debt swapping and debt conversion has to do with you have to put up a considerable amount of money as a country, the mm-hmm. country receiving the debt forgiveness. First, yeah. it speaks of the other country that you owe. They have to forgive your debt. So it's technically writing off your debt,
mm-hmm.
like you made mention earlier, writing off the debt. But you have to prove a condition to them before they write off the debt. Meaning that the sector that they were helping you in,
mm-hmm.
you have to put up money beforehand saying, this is the capital we're going to use to help the programs in the sector. Local currency value. We're going to help the sector with our own financing. Which speaks to, remember when you and I did the medium-term expenditure framework, the 1,000-page document, back in March, where we highlighted the wonderful scenario of how we were internally financing most of these particular projects ourselves,
mm-hmm.
which went like, hey, this looks nice, this looks good, because in the executive summary of that document, it said, you know, it was above 60% internal financing for our own projects, and yeah. a very small percentage was still external financing for some projects. Developmental countries will only achieve their desired positions if they take ownership of that they are using their money for their needs. I'm really sorry, Helmut. You will only respect something if you own it.
Yeah.
That's why one of the wisest, most uneconomically affiliated speeches that I ever got was on high school when I came here to Windhoek. I had a teacher here at St. Torres. Not a teacher. She was a teacher, for obviously, firstly, but she was also my principal. Where she kept yelling at us every assembly Monday morning. It's the most philosophical deposit that has never parted, that has never left my mind. Every Monday morning she asked us, why do you litter at my school, but you don't litter at home, at your mother's house? Now you and I know what happens when you litter at your mother's house. There's either three forms of authority that intervene on your personal sovereignty, which is usually they invade your personal space uh-huh. through direct intervention and interventionist actions.
In high speed.
Yeah, at high speed sometimes. And it's always delivered in a shock and awe state of things. There's always a lot of noise. It's either you crying or them shouting before you cry. And the three levels of
one or another, you're crying.
Yeah, of authority is usually, it's either your mother, it's either your father, or it's through an elder sibling that has deferred authority to invade your personal space.
Or, you know, Department of Correction, as they are also sometimes known as uncles.
Okay, no, I didn't have uncles that
time. You lucky guy.
I just had siblings, you know, siblings that intervened.
You lucky guy.
But that's just why I told you I had siblings. And some of those siblings, some of them felt like they were really trying to impress my mother, you know. They were like, you know what? I did a good job. Look at Dwight. Look at Dwight. He's crying. He's crying. No way. And I did a good job.
Welcome to Africa. Yeah.
So, and it was one of the most basic positions, basic philosophical positions.
So, in other words, at home, there are consequences that comes with you littering, like ones that are direct.
Yeah, but, very direct.
Here, you can now just run around doing it because you know that you don't have any direct consequences coming your way.
Exactly. So, It's the same lesson that needs to permeate also in a developmental sense. For that, ad break.
Kapena on tanto di volife puta shop right. Era rakano jitu okupa on tanto di ripevi mi pumbi watopumga esko keke. Tarako lite nambari zomaga ligo kujago right brand sunflower. Hamarona hetatu no senda omirago way no way keke. Oshuo oka paki konyama unzi maton peg. Hetatu no way no senda omirago way no way mo keiji. Tinda okufuta shivulife o shop right price. Zirikosu oka hamano gayulae nuvo. Oko shop right akuki.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. It's just a minute past the. It's just a minute past the hour of six. If you just tuned in, you are listening to the end of Homerun, and of course the. In a few minutes, business and economic segment starts. Now, when it comes to financing for development in developing countries, go. Mm.
So, when you look at this particular scenario, Helmut, and this is a scenario you can even cascade downwards, for example, to this donation of the trucks that took place.
Yeah.
Once again, I'll just state it, I have nothing wrong with the donation that took place. It is just that we have two completely polar opposites of service delivery and functions that exist in this Namibian economy, where you will see with the commercial farmers, they actually generate business between themselves. One guy has a truck, I pay you to transport my cattle from point A to B,
mm-hmm.
and then you get to a setting where it comes to communal farmers, and I'm sorry, I have to position it this way. Babysitting continues to persist. I'm really sorry for using the term babysitting, but...
Oh yeah, it is babysitting at this point.
But if you sit with an asset, Helmut, and I'm viewing this as an asset, you're sitting with an asset. The asset has a money monetary value to it. Start selling some of the asset to technically buy your own hardware. From your own hardware, I mean, what's the other thing I wanted to factor in into our discussion? And this is from the discussion that we had the other day, based upon the communal areas, but it was actually from another discussion entirely, where some people were highlighting that there's a lack or shortage of availability in the communal areas because there are still people that are alive living in the same spaces in the same zones. And there's not enough spare of the resource left, technically, to go around. It's a finite resource. It'll stay finite. And it's a resource that's not, you know, it doesn't replenish. There's no rate of replenishment. The downside that you're sitting with right there is that space will be an issue. Space will always become an issue because it's either scenario of you then move to a sparsely populated region, for example, like parts of Kunene or parts of Kavango West. But then accessibility to services becomes another particular downside of things. You have to ask the question. The availability of the resource of land translates to how much there is to go about or how much there is to divide
with people that want land in the future generations as well. Now, if you're sitting with 2 million head of cattle behind the red line, that's now in the northern communal areas, you're sitting with 2 million head of cattle versus 900,000 below the red line, which is in scattered across 90% of the surface area of Namibia. And anyone that sees into that statistic and goes like, oh, wow, that means there's a lot of land to go by. No, I didn't fill in the gaps that are obvious to fill in. Behind the red line, the conservation areas, the conservancy areas, the national parks are not as big and as large as below the red line. You can't go and farm on the Skeleton Coast, which is a national park. You can't go and farm in the Tsau Cape, in the south, where much majority of the Tsau Cape is the Speergebied that I spoke of. It's cordoned off, and you only find Ludrits and Oranjemund as the only two livable areas in that zone. But it's land that you can have potentially. Livestock farming can take place there. But we don't know as to why, you know, the Speergebied still exists. There's this perceived secrecy discussion.
That, you might pick up a diamond?
You might. Even though the world is heading towards fake diamonds.
Like May diamonds.
Yeah. Fake diamonds.
I just have the same application, both industrial and in the department of I do.
Yeah. It's still heading in that direction. So, there's land there. But then, here's the other discussions as well. Mining is becoming a more, not robust, it has always been robust. Yeah. But mining is becoming a more aggressive economic pathway that Namibia is pursuing. You can see every year, Helmut, gradually, the mining sector is literally saying, we want more. We want to do more.
Mm-hmm.
We promise we can pay more. Where it leads to policies like this. Yes, there was a previous policy back in 2018 that preceded the one of the discussion that you and I did on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
The downside is Friday's discussion, they were sharing, because that's it didn't say draft. It's a final document. It didn't say draft. They were sharing supposedly that document with stakeholders of the industry, of industries. Now, ask yourselves the particular question, dear listeners. When you see a finite resource like land, and please forget the other thinking that you can just walk across a border and go take someone else's land in a different country. Please, you are on your own. I do hope that the Ministry of International Relations does not intervene so that you should be taught a lesson for doing ridiculous things like that. If you walk across the border, you will cause a border scenario. You know, may God be with you because you alone are going to jail. The downside is when you look at these particular scenarios of how finite land is, the communal farmers will have to pick up their socks, Hamut. Hamut, if your dad leaves you 100 head of cattle, just 100, ne? I know. I am embellishing that quantity. And I'm embellishing slightly.
Thank you.
And I'm slightly embellishing the example itself, you know, as to make it as sound, to making it as flattering as possible to you. Because I don't know how much cattle your dad probably owns.
He doesn't own 100 of them, I can tell you that.
Well, he probably has, you know, commandeered a few from you. If there was like shared herds, you know. Because I know what dads sometimes do. They say, no, my child, I've got some cattle for you. And then you hear your cattle were the only ones that were sold off to the auction.
It's the only one that died in the disease. I'm like, wait, what?
Or it's the one that you eat when you play.
You know, last time you visited, that meat that you ate.
You remember for your wedding, eh? Yeah, that was your favorite bull.
One and only.
Yeah. So, you know, things were nice. So, the downside here is, unfortunately, the communal farmers would have to realize it's either you invest in yourself and you take your endeavor to new heights, because this means You invest in the animal. You invest in the services around the animal. You invest in the services affiliated to your activity of agriculture so that you get the best returns. Now, all of this means it'll be costs. You'll have to pay money. And how do you pay money? Well, any person at the bank will tell you, any bank worker or, you know, some people that work in banks will tell you, well, you need to start selling from your assets. Sell your assets so that you make money. It's the same principle that a shop works on. A shop has to sell liquid assets. Liquid assets are the stock. So the stock is the milk, the sugar, the coffee in the shop. Convert that into money because it has a monetary value and it needs to be sold. It needs to move. Start selling things. Sell one or two cattle. Invest in your own truck. Get your own truck license. Keep the costs as close to your management, your management capabilities and your budgeting capabilities as possible. And then you work from there. If you're going to ask me, Dwight, since when did you become a financial advisor? Well, I've seen it with family members. They've done it themselves. I've seen it with people that I know. They've done it themselves. They realize, you know what? Either I hire or rent someone else's truck. You've seen it. It's the guys, like Helmut said, that help you move to your new place of residence, you know, from your one landlord to another landlord. That's the scenario. That's the situation. You've got to take charge of your own particular aspects. Like the adage goes, take charge of your own destiny. And on that particular note, dear listeners, it ultimately sort of like, well, we have strayed like 11 minutes past the top of the hour at 6. And ultimately it does bring us up to the end of this evening's or this afternoon's discussion here on your drive time session of The Home Run. And let's see each other again, same time, same place. Stay tuned for the rest of your programming. And we'll be back.
Yeah, and coming up is a business and economic segment. Home Run parks the bus here. So until tomorrow, same time, same place from me. Y'all have a good one. Oh, you're done. Okay.
Yeah, I'm done. It was just you left, Helmut.
All right.
Yeah.
To all Eagle FM listeners, do you want to stand a chance to win a voucher of $500 Namibian weekly? Answer this easy question. Please tell us, what are the three colors of the USAVE logo? Please SMS your answer to 081-200-4144 and tune in every Friday between 1:45 and 2:00 to find out if you are the lucky winner. The winner will be announced every Friday live on air between 1:45 and 2:00. Participate weekly to improve your chance. We'll save at USAVE.